Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
podcast while walking. I'm going to cover the fibers of life, and that's cellulose, which is in plants, you know, the woody stuff. Keratin, which is sort of the fibers in animals, sort of makes up nails, and with calcium phosphate and keratin make up bones. So your bones is fibrous, and something called chitin, which is the material of, just get a handle on this, of insects. Interestingly, funguses and bacteria. So I'm going to give a insight on that, but as we get going, I'll sort of explain the overall thing. You might hear a bit of traffic noise and hopefully not too much of a thud, thud, thud as I walk. I'm actually doing this while walking, sort of to get up my fitness, lose weight. It's a real big struggle. I didn't believe losing weight would be such a hideously hard struggle. That's basically lose weight. There's a simple formula: do more, eat less. So if you do, they're the two things. You've got to do sufficiently more and eat sufficiently less over a protracted period of time for this to work. And there's sort of other factors that involve this, is water retention and stuff like that. But that's true with all things equal. And there's a whole series of bits of science and mind games for doing it. Now, it's interesting, it's a great thing that the amount of energy in food is so high that you have to do a huge amount to burn off that. But if you can deplete your fat, your energy storage, you remove the energy plus the energy storage. So if you burn your fat, so to speak, you burn more than that amount of energy. The fat cells shrink amount of energy. So fat is basically oil, and you eat your oily food. An oily chip is an oily self. So fat inside. And in fact, a lot of fats, I think, there's some hard fats, and fats do various things as shock absorbers and packing. It's not just for energy to go across going it. So I'm aiming on that. Now, the in terms of cardiac or mental rehab, it's the idea of putting two activities together all the time. And as I say, or linked sequential activities, so that's podcasting and then writing it up, trying to remember things and doing it. I'm sort of not pushing myself as much as I should in that department, but sitting down and working on something, I just have a lot less energy. But if I'm doing an exercise or walking and talking at the same time, I have a bit more energy, and apparently it's better for recollection. And if you, say, going to go to a walk, you have to gather your thoughts a little bit ahead of time and make sure that you can do it. So we're getting back to this is the fibers of life, and I've given molecular tours. I won't give too much of a little molecular tour. So this is from quantum physics. You get an idea of the molecular structure and how that structure works. So this is not anything similar to a supercomputer simulation, but really all the molecular life, molecular stuff, involves shaped molecules with activity centers in certain points, and essentially they lock together to form little nanomachines, and the little nanomachines work together to form a cell which behaves in such a way, and eventually you can have muscles and everything happening, enzymes and all the bacteria and stuff like that. But this is a story about the fibers, the actual building block, if you like, the Lego block, and how it's sort of divided up. Now, it comes on from there was a hexafluoromoron, marin. This is a termite bait that my termite man is using. And I sort of look it up online, oh, it's not that expensive. I'm paying a huge amount of money between bait and the baiting and the stuff like that. So you just do pay through the nose for someone to look at it for a period of time and inspect bait. So it's the knowledge that you're paying. So fluorohexa, hexafluorum, whatever it is, it's just sort of aromatic compounds. It's got a backbone of oxygens. You've got some fluorines in it, links. And sort of again to look at that and say, oh, should do a molecular tour of that. And what that does is it breaks down the chitin. And I said, heard that bit before, but what is chitin? And look at it, chitin. Oh, it's just a sugar molecule with some carbate. What's the actual term? It's amino, not carbolic acid. Look, the names escape me. It's just a carbon with an oxygen bond going to another carbon. So it's a little bit different from where a protein is, but it's similar, and you can see how that provides sort of a new form of sugar. And so essentially this hexafluoramine, or chlorine, no, it's fluorine, interferes with the insect's ability to manufacture this chitin, and therefore it becomes soft and tough, and essentially it can't actually produce more chitin. So it's chitin's new use. Basically, if an ant bites you, it's biting to you in with chitin, and its exoskeleton's made out of this thing called chitin, C-H-I-T-I-N. And one that can sort of see that the surface becomes dehydrated and brittle, and underneath it becomes a sort of compressed exoskeleton, and so that new layer of chitin from underneath expands and blows the next skeleton off. Now, if the chitin is not manufactured, the rest of the insect continues to grow and actually compresses itself to death. And so that's how this termite poison activates. And so it's a specific enzyme or inhibitor, chitin inhibitor, and it does certain things to the termite. It means that its teeth are softer, so it can no longer use sort of a highly structured form of chitin in order to cut through. Now, so chitin, like all keratin and all these types of things, are built into composite materials. So keratin built in with calcium phosphate makes a bone, or it can also make hair, fingernails, all these different structures. And you've got other things called collagen, which is more rubbery. Collagen. There's a more rubbery effect and things there. So there's an array of chemicals inside humans and plants. So you've got these three kingdoms, and groups, basically, so the tree of life is sort of, the two sort of groups are made in different groupings to move across. Now, all life produces protein, and in fact, you can produce pretty well anything you want. Your body has got the chemical systems in it to produce anything you want and you need, given enough nutrients, the building blocks. So essentially, your body is a factory, and it just requires inwards goods, and it can manufacture anything except vitamins. There tends to be amines that the body cannot manufacture. So it has to go to an extent to try and manufacture it. Vitamin D is a sort of closely run thing because that's produced by sunlight, absorbing sunlight. The other ones are the vitamins you actually need. Now, it just so happens, I think, different animals have different sets of vitamins. These are general items. Now, all, so DNA is a fiber, and it's not any of those other fibers. It's a special, sort of sugar and amino acid, sugar, ribose sugar, and a phosphate strand to make this special sugar. So it's a bit of an unusual sugar. Most sugars are have got a ring of carbon with oxygens and hydroxys on it, and except for ribose, you can make a special set of ribose where you remove the oxygens, and that's deoxyed ribose. That's the oxygens are removed in your DNA. So your DNA is one thing, your RNA is one thing, but the end result of that is it starts to manufacture proteins, and the proteins are the machine. So all life has DNA, and all DNA produces protein, and then these proteins then act as enzymes. These are chemical, site chemical factories we've complained about, or it can be in situ chemical factories together, with things coming together, and then they can make, depending on what your life form is, well, animals are a bit limited. They can only make more proteins. They can make things like fats, and plants make fats. Plants make fats and store them in nuts. Nuts are fatty. So a nut, if you get it, you can actually burn a nut. Get a nut, and it has so much fat in it, it can burn. And seeds generally have fats. So fats is just a storage of, or fats are non-water soluble. Sugars. Now, the entire thing of making sugars. Now, I don't know whether humans can make sugars if they want to. I'm sure that we make certain forms of sugar, we obviously make DNA, and DNA is a sugary form. The problem with sugar is that they tend to be water soluble. So plants do two things to make them non-water soluble. They modify the sugar on the outer to make it a starch. So starch is a sugar reconfigured not to be water soluble, except if you have an enzyme which unlocks that and changes it from water soluble to, from insoluble to soluble, breaks it up into a sugar, and sugar dissolves into its basic two-part components, monomers, which form a polymer eventually in a crystal or something. Something along that line. So your body can make anything. Now, the certain things that obviously your body doesn't tend to make is cellulose, although you could convert to produce it. And then plants produce proteins and fats, and almost everything produces a little bit of everything, but this chitin is a rather unusual thing. So let's go off before we go. I suppose the easiest thing is to talk about proteins. So protein is a carbon with an amine, a carbon with a side chain, and a carbon with an oxygen bond, a double oxygen bond, and then the double oxygen bond can, that other bond there can be a hydroxide. So a double oxygen bond, a carbon and hydroxide, which an OH is a carbolic acid. So this is called an amino. That is, it's got a amine. acid, and it's a protein. Now we're going to talk about, in chitin, it's got something very similar to a protein, but it's not a protein plucked on it. And so let's talk about proteins first. To make keratin, which is the animal version of fiber, hair, and stuff like that. And so hairs and things like that, keratins are made from a basic four sequences of amino acids. Four sequences of amino acids, I really should know them, but they have, if you like, receptors on the outside, and so these four receptors form a helix, and so you can form basically a basic, proteins can all fold and do all these fantastic things, have double sulfur bonds, all this. Now, there is actually sulfur in your hair when your hair. It's got so much in it, and there's pigments in your hair. Except if you're grey like me, your hair is actually see through. You look at in the microscope and you say, "My God, that is not white. It's not white paper. It's actually see through." But the important aspect of this is that your DNA gets unzipped and goes to your messenger RNA, your messenger RNA goes up and goes as a program into your rRNA, which is the machine, and the machine clocks through your messenger RNA by calling its transport RNA, and the transport RNA is this big clunk of RNA which brings in basically amino acids, and the amino acids then just basically physically twist and push in your acid to the amine. So amino is basic, acid is thing. An acid plus a base is a salt plus water, making this designer aperiodic string, which is called your proteins. So that's how amino acid makes the protein. The protein then goes off and gets folded. Now, if it is in the case of a hair or a fingernail, it gets folded, and it basically keeps on stitching on a string protein onto your fingernails. And you will know that you can actually rip your fingernails. Your fingernails have this sort of like hair. Hair's long. Keeps on adding onto it. And so, basically, this is the animal fiber, which is like wool or anything like that. And it's these four basic amino acids which come together, and they sort of block into each other like a Lego block, if you like. And so that's how animals make protein. So if you eat an animal, you are eating basically fat, protein, a little bit of sugar if the animal's eating sugar, but it's mostly protein on it. Now, plants also have protein. They have protein in all their enzymes and stuff like that. But they also mass produce sugar from sunlight, and so they repurpose sugar a number of ways to make cellulose. Cellulose and sugar and fructose and various things like that. So you can have from what I remember, sugar is maybe 5 carbons, 6 carbons, but it's a self-estered thing. That this is where it's basically a little string of carbon, like a hydrocarbon. So essentially, you get off carbon dioxide and water, and what it does is it casts off the double bonded oxygens, then springs out two spare bonds to go north and south of the carbon, and instead of those two bonds, it's got a single bond for a hydrogen and a single bond for an OH. So the OH has replaced the oxygen. So water comes in, oxygen goes out, and carbon hangs around. So rather than going back in the atmosphere, it produces this thing which is sugar, comes along and essentially goes a certain length, and then it casts off a water game. That is, a hydrogen's ripped off, I suppose. So you've got two OHs, and the two OHs are pulled together such that H2O comes off and the oxygen sticks across, forming the sugar. So it's sort of an interesting thing there. Now, then this does this repeated again, and so there's an oxygen in the ring, and then there's an oxygen between the two things, and you generally have the basic unit as a disaccharide. Two units, and so one can be five rings, one can be six rings, putting it there, or you can get lactose, you know, so essentially we produce sugar. So milk is quite sugary and sweet, so anything with O's, fructose, I mean, it's a sugar. So people talk about what is the sugar content of milk. The simple answer, it is the lactose. An example of milk, and of course if you drink a milkshake, there's syrup and more sweetness is put in it. So milk is sweet, you know. It's a fundamental aspect of it. Honey is sweet and milk is sweet. And there you go, nectar is a sugar, an edible throwaway sugar that plants produce. Okay, so we've got the basic idea of a sugar, and basically depending, sugar you can have so many different varieties of basically each carbon has, each carbon has a water on it. It's a hydrocarbon. Sugar is a hydrocarbon. You have these different, so each carbon you have in a hydrocarbon has four bonding positions where the next carbon can be, or say if you've got a series of carbon bonds, so you call them one to four, and one is by definition the previous carbon. The orientation of 2, 3, and 4. That can be rotationally set, but you can select what goes in each of those things, sort of interchange it sequentially. And so from just this very basic structure, you can build things where it's hydrogen bonding inside itself, okay, or hydrogen bonds in the outside world. If a hydrogen bonds in the outside world, it will be water soluble, and if it does the reverse and starts to hydrogen bond inside and produces a polar bond to the outside, it's not water soluble. You get wood or cellulose. Cellulose is see-through fibrous material. And so plants basically have used sugar for food storage and cellulose as a fiber to build structures, to build them higher and higher up. And so a plant which essentially started off life as create gardening the photosynthetic bacteria called chlorophylls, putting that there, plants the garden. Essentially, it built the garden up higher up in little solar cells, little garden, and so the plant is basically a chlorophyll garden raised above the sky. This is the fibrous plants which can manufacture cellulose. And of course, animals learn to eat cellulose. This is grazing animals. And animals either really decided to eat cellulose, which takes a lot of energy, enzymes to digest, low energy content. Whereas if you are lucky enough and decide, well, I'm going to cut the difference, I'm going to actually eat other animals, you then get the advantage that the animal has concentrated the energy. And so eating a steak is equivalent to eating, you know, several loaves of bread, so to speak. to get the energy. It's a bit more complicated nowadays. So the plant's got the structure, and it's gone down this route. And so your cellulose is basically sugar. And so you've got keratin and cellulose, and of course you've got this other thing called chitin. Chitin. Now, so the animals need, besides the fiber, they need surface structure, and essentially we've got the same soft surface structure. We don't have cellulose on the outside, but we still have this cell wall membrane, and we make a membrane out of fat. That is, we have a asymmetric molecule called a lipid, and the lipid has a water-soluble end and a fat-soluble end. So the fat-soluble end forms a membrane as the fat tries to find some other fat, but then it's pulled out by water, so it goes water-soluble, fat, water, and so you get this very thin layer of fat called a lipid layer, and this is basically what an animal is going in. So chitin is something akin to cellulose, but it's cellulose with not just normal hydrogen bonding but additional hydrogen bonding. So one of the hydroxides that are taken out, and in its place is called acetylamide. I think that might be it. I'll just talk through it. So you've got your sugar, and on each sugar is plugged in this acetylamide, which is basically where the oxygen OH is. You plug in a carbon, and on one of the bonds of that carbon has four bonds coming out, a hydrogen, and on the other one a nitrogen, and on that nitrogen has another two hydrogens, and the next one goes up to bond to a carbon. Carbon has, so this is, you've got your second carbon along, and your second carbon along bonds one to that first carbon, two to an oxygen, and then next bond is just to a methyl group, which is carbon, and hydrogen's on it. Now, the important thing here is that that's a very sort of fatty one. That means that you are priming your oxygen for hydrogen bonding, and then you've got the nitrogen, which produces lots of hydrogen bonds in it, and the way that it operates. And so you're sending this acetyl side chain on each sugar is just got absolute locked together. So you're making this sort of lightweight cellulose, and this is the material which bacteria synthesize. They eat sugar, add this acetylamine, is it? I've got to really think if that's the term, to eat sugar, and convert that sugar or cellulose into basically bacteria super surface. And of course, one of the things that you have is things that dissolve, and dissolve that quite quickly. So we have enzymes which basically, since they encounter that, break it apart. So these enzymes fight against the bacteria and basically insects or any funguses in it that's going across. Now this bacteria is co-opted by another group of life called the funguses. So there's basically, it can be, people say, is it plant, animal, or mineral? Well, it really should be plant, animal, fungus, mineral, or bacteria. You could go for a thing. So most people say, is it plant, animal, or mineral? Well, it's actually another thing. It's a fungus. It's neither plant nor animal. So a plant uses cellulose, an animal uses protein fibers, mushrooms uses, and bacteria uses chitin. So your mushroom that you cook up, it heats up, and this beautiful sort of rubbery sort of, you know, it's nothing like a cooked mushroom, of course, is basically this insect skin that you're eating. And of course, insects also produce this chitin, and it's the surface of their wings. It's built in certain ways to form the iridescent surfaces of butterfly wings. And it's built like a composite, and it's, it has things built into it. So it can be hydrated and soft and flexible, so you can have some of this keratin being absolutely quite soft. So if it's, it can't be all solid, there's soft parts of the insect, for which allows it to move, and it forms complete waterproof outer surface. It's, you know, so the important thing is that an insect, one of the great things about insects is that they have survived on land, and they survive in a low water environment. Now, you've also got crustaceans use the same process, and you know, you can sort of understand it. It's got to build fibers, protein fiber. You've got to, you know, manufacture your own proteins for it. I suppose it just means it's sort of a, overall, it's a very much cheaper, thinner thing to make rather than a protein, because the protein, to get a one protein coil is not very weak. You've got several super helixes coming together. So it's quite, to get a hair sort of fiber, it's quite big. Of course, this chitin is the material of spider webs. That's what a spider web is. It's chitin, and it's sort of related in terms of to Kevlar. So spider silk is extremely, so silk is another example. If I have a silk 90, I've got basically, you know, it's manufactured by insects. What do you expect? It's made by chitin. And so this chitin, it's got variations in it, and it's variations in the compound. And so we make it now, this artificial spider web like Kevlar. And I'm just trying to think of some other Dacron and stuff like that. I'm just really trying to remember some of the structures. So you got structures up like that, which are incredibly, incredibly strong. Then you go through, I'm just trying to remember, it's carbon, oxygen. I have to remember what these polyesters, polyethers. Ester? Ether. I've got to remember the difference between ether and ester. There you go. So, chitin is this structure. And I really do think the way that we teach kids is it's plant, animal, and then people don't talk about fungus, people don't talk about bacteria, they don't talk about insects. Now, insects obviously are an animal, they are an animal which have gone through and basically hijacked the bacteria shell. So essentially an insect and crustaceans, insects and crustaceans, all kinds of things, have employed technique from a bacteria. So plants and animals have used, so all advanced life is running on cheats or bits of code, DNA code from bacteria. And so we run on bacteria, which is called the mitochondria. Now bacteria, they're enslaved bacteria. And so your DNA reproduces at the top, all the things, but then it's got to have a little separate DNA for the mitochondria, and that reproduces separately. So we've got sort of our reproduction, cell reproduction, is a dual reproduction. So when the cell goes up and divides, the mitochondria divides, or basically if a cell's put under anti-stress and wants more energy conversion, it will ask the cells to produce more mitochondria. And so the cells can produce more energy. So you can train cells to produce more energy. Now, similarly, a plant will have the chlorophyll. So what is chloroplast? Now, chlorophylls have chloroplast chemicals in it, but they can also have flagella in them. So the chlorophylls... this is true. Chlorophylls can actually swim around in the plant and swim up to the light and swim away from danger and all this type of stuff. So you've got this co-opting. Now, insects obviously have mitochondria. They've got... So all animals have the energy-producing bacteria because although a cell cannot eat sugar, a cell... eats ATP, adenosine triphosphate. So adenosine triphosphate. GCTA. I think that's in the triphosphate is the phosphate is hooked directly to the base, whereas in oh no, it's not. Yeah, so this is good. The base, the ribose, and a various number of phosphates adding onto it. And your phosphate basically adds as a negative charge battery, and it's like a battery, and the charge is in the battery, and so essentially you've got these little rechargeable batteries. So your cell operates on rechargeable batteries, which are recharged by the decomposition of sugar and oxygen putting together in your thing. So there's your life is not just simple. Your cell doesn't just simply do it. Your cell feeds captive mitochondria to produce ATP. And as I say all this, I'm going to say, oh, bloody hell, I have to... sorry for swearing, you have to memorize all this. Now, but insects have gone one further in terms of that they've taken another aspect of bacteria, and it may be interesting to see if the DNA footprints used in insects can be actually traced back to bacteria. But as bacteria produces this chitin, so does the cell. So does the insect uses the chitin in large scale to reduce its outer shells. And so this is a very important part of, I suppose, chemistry. And it brings it all together. I think most people would know about cellulose, get very shady about keratin. But keratin's got these, I think really people should, learn the four building blocks of keratin. And so they might know about keratin, they definitely don't know about chitin, chitin, C-H-I-T-I-N, and how that makes up funguses. And it goes into this type of stuff. So you can imagine that the fungus has a thing with bacteria. Now, funguses are like animals. Well, animals feed off live stuff or recently dead stuff, or plants. Plants which are alive, whereas funguses feed off dead stuff. And essentially, a fungus is sort of like a fungus is a parallel to the animal kingdom. But it's when something's dead, it sort of rather melts into the earth, and so your fungus has evolved to actually physically move through the earth. So the funguses move pretty much like plants do, but by direction of growth. And so fungus can move in there. Now, if you've got one of the disadvantages of chitin in the fungus and cellulose in a plant, it means that you can't move once you've got those two things. But things with a soft body can move across, and so things like slime mold is very primitive. It's archaic. It's got no cell nucleus. It's not non-eukaryotic. Talk about what it is. It can. It's got its DNA is distributed. Its chemicals are distributed. It can actually display sort of quasi or basic intelligence, chemical intelligence by chemical processing, and it can move up. Now, a slime mold goes up and eats funguses. So you can have funguses on a surface, and slime mold will move up and eat it. Now, I suppose the interesting thing is that you've got these bacteria can the sort of bacteria and funguses and things like this have this chitin, means that it can control its water control. So one of the things that you can do is kill molds by freezing. So if you wet a book, if a book becomes wet, you've got the cellulose of the paper, and your mold within a couple of hours start to grow and eat up your book. So if you have a book which is wet, so this is, I just found this out, if you've got a disastrous something and it wets, you have to chuck that in a freezer. So freezing will kill a mold, or the mold that's about the place. And so you've got these processes coming across. Now, there's a lot of things that in the, this thing producing a huge quantity of light at me. So I don't know what it is. It's up ahead. I won't go to it. I'll just, finish off and go home at this stage. So some sort of, what is it up there? It's producing, it's a truck. It's producing incredible amount of light out of its headlights. There's noise coming from it. I don't know, there's something wrong is happening. For all this process, the environment is doing things. So chitin may be a response to hostile environments. At some point, these archaic things began to produce this surface on it. And so the surface on your bacteria. So your bacteria buds, it grows up to a certain point and it stops. It doesn't keep on growing. Or it might grow as a tube, but then it will bud off and make it. So this thing which makes bacteria resilient to the environment, so you can desiccate stuff, you can heat up there, moisture won't go outside it, but it's still got the same basic structure, means that it has to reproduce very quickly. And then, so if it reproduces very quickly, it then has the units, as a colony, they have to start to produce a signal to each other. And so bacteria start to have the elements of multicellular activity, and that is they send chemical signals to each other and access a whole. So it's quorum sensing, but in a certain sense, we are like that in terms of we are huge colonies of this eukaryotic cells, and they respond to the environment in the environment sends out a strong hormone throughout your entire body. So you can see sort of like hormones, there's external hormones. Now insects, very similar, insects have lots of bacteria, but insects have an external production of scent. Now it's a very unknown whether humans respond to scent, something like that. So just getting back to recovery on this, hopefully I've gone through the three different fibres, and on one aspect hopefully you've learned it, and hopefully I am slowly progressing forward to being able to give coherent lessons on it, and I am slowly improving my ability to give lessons.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.